how important having a message and a strategy and a contrast really are in these campaigns. And then, frankly, taking the time to actually raise the money and make the fundraising calls and knock on doors and communicate with people and really do that work. And it is a lot of work. That discipline matters so much.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. I was glad to get the chance to talk to Joe Fuld. Joe is a longtime political campaign staffer and manager and political consultant who has over the last decade built a business called The Campaign Workshop, which produces direct mail, digital, and creative strategies for many progressive and nonprofit clients. Their blog on campaigning reaches 20 to 30,000 visits a month. Prior to becoming a Democratic political consultant, Joe managed many campaigns and also worked for the DNC. Joe is a very experienced political trainer and facilitator. For example, he's been lead trainer for the Gay and Lesbian Victory Institute's Candidate and Campaign Training School for over 15 years. We had an interesting conversation, full of insights about politics and entrepreneurship, and even Joe's hobby of stand-up comedy. I hope you'll listen. So, after a quick word from our sponsor, my interview with a Democratic political consultant, Joe Fuld.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from TimePlots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. TimePlots' library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Nathaniel, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Would you mind introducing yourself, giving me a quick biography?
Sure. I'm Joe Fuld. I'm president of the Campaign Workshop, and we're an advertising agency that does strategy, digital, direct mail, and training for groups and organizations and candidates across the country on the progressive side.
How long have you been doing that?
Well, I've had and been the president of this agency. We started in 2009. I started with one employee. It'll be 10 years coming up in March. We're just about to hit our 10-year anniversary. But I've been running and working on campaigns and involved in campaigns since 1990.
How many employees now at your
group? We're 13.
So substantially bigger than the
starting with one employee and a couple milk crates, yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Rockland County, New York, about 45 miles north of New York City.
Mm-hmm. What was high school like for you?
High school was kind of a struggle for me. I'm dyslexic, and so that was difficult in some ways, but also I wound up having a lot of different creative outlets. I really started getting into video and into radio, and also really love politics. So all of those things, both the sort of the creative production side was something I always really loved, but then just politics in general, I really loved, and went from going to school in Rockland County, New York, to Ramapo Senior High School, to American University here in Washington, D.C., and got really into politics.
What was the first presidential candidate that you fell for, if you did?
Bruce Babbitt was the first presidential candidate that I fell for. I guess that was 88. And I went up to New Hampshire and did some work. I lost all the skin on my upper lip canvassing, like in 0 degree weather, right? All kinds
of. I was like, what, did you talk that much?
No, I think it was just sitting in cars with no heat and having, like, yeah. So, I mean, I had all the volunteer experiences you could have.
And Bruce Babbitt seemed like a good guy and a decent governor, you know? Like, yeah,
he was a good guy. I got to meet him a few times. I mean, it was nice to be on a campaign that was that small at the very beginning. And there were a lot of like people on that campaign that went on to like do amazing things. It was just a really good intro as a college kid, right, to hang out and see what something was. And I could go to the headquarters in DC, and it wasn't big, and campaign wasn't around that long, but I got to know a lot of people and very, very early on, and it really helped me catch the political bug.
What did you study in college?
So I studied political science and public communication and graduated with a degree in political science and a minor in public communication, and really—
You studied the right thing for your career.
I studied the right thing for my career, and it allowed me to get a lot of internships. I mean, I did a lot of internships, and frankly, it really helped me figure out what I wanted to do with my life. So I interned for Peter Fenn, and at that time, Peter had a firm with Mark Putnam and Steve Murphy and Tom King, and Peter became and is a mentor of mine, and I still keep in touch with Mark.
These are very well-regarded political consultants.
Yeah, right? But that really allowed me to get a start about finding some kind of a touchstone when you're in politics on what do you want to do and where do you want to be? Where do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, it's something I still ask myself today, like what's the road that I want to take? But that experience allowed me to really see people who were doing it and were doing things that I might want to do. This mix of political strategy and creative was something I really wanted to get into and figure out how to do. And I remember having a conversation with Peter Fenn when I probably was 19 years old. And I'm like, hey, how do I get to where you are? He said to me, well, go on the road for 6 years. And if you go manage for campaigns for 6 years, someone's going to hire you back in DC. And that probably would allow you to do consulting. When I was starting out, there wasn't that much consulting infrastructure as there is today in the world of political consulting. I mean, there's lots of political consulting, but it really was about going out on the road and getting real field experience.
When you were talking to them, did you think about the business of it, or was it more about interested in the politics and the strategy?
And the creative side of it, of like actually making spots or making ads and later on making direct mail or digital ads. The creative part I always enjoyed and the nexus of the creativity and how you sort of operationalize the creativity and strategy, I always thought was really interesting. But it wasn't so much at that point about running a business. It was at that point, hey, how do I work on campaigns and issues that I care about?
When I look at political ads, I haven't thought of them as a deeply creative enterprise in general. The budget and the time frame don't always allow to make beautiful stuff, but sometimes. What struck you as exciting about that space?
I would also say creative doesn't have to be beautiful, right? Yeah. Creative has to be functional.
Or serve well the purpose that you're—
The strategic purpose.
Yeah.
And I was always interested in media and how media could reach people or how people could reach people. So whether it was working and seeing how spots were made when I was doing an internship or figuring out what a pitch was when I was going door to door, how you persuade mattered to me. And I think there's a lot of creativity in persuasion and in trying to think about and figure out how do you connect with people in the right way. So I always thought it was interesting. And I also think like there's a big swing in sort of the level of what is good advertising and bad advertising, what is good political advertising and bad political advertising, what is just very sort of schlocky run-of-the-mill ads, and what is good, solid advertising. And I think we really try in everything we put out to put out good, solid advertising.
Why Democrat? Why progressives only? Where did that come from?
Really interesting. My dad was a Republican, and my dad worked in the corporate world, and I traveled around a lot as a kid. So I lived in Switzerland and Australia as a little kid and moved back to Rockland County and grew up there. But my mom was really a progressive. My mom's an artist. She sculpts. And I don't know, some of that came from them, but just somewhere along the way, I really made those conscious decisions about, am I a Democrat? Am I a Republican? And really looking at the types of issues and things. I was in college really interested in issues like homelessness and did some volunteer work around that. And it just spoke to me that sort of being a Democrat and being a progressive was the right call for me. I still feel that way today.
What was the first real job out of college?
I think that would be an arguing point with my parents, whether or not I still have a real job. But
what was the first paying job out of college?
So I did an independent study in college that was turned into opposition research on Dan Coats, right? That literally it was the backbone of what wound up being an FEC complaint against Dan Coats. I then made friends who were doing work in Indiana, and they said, hey, we know this congressman who's running for re-election. His name is Jim Johns, and you should go meet him, and you should do field in rural Indiana. And Jim was one of these guys who literally slept in his office in D.C. He was an activist. He won his first race for state rep by 4 votes, his next race for state senate by like 20 votes, and his first race for Congress by certainly less than 1,000 votes, and he was the most anti-Bush representative in the House running in, at that point, was a 41% Democratic performance district.
So was he a really good candidate?
He was a very grassroots, door-to-door, strong, like relationship-based candidate. And it was the best background and best experience that I could ever get in thinking about how you run good campaigns and how a candidate can really break through and build a following even when people don't always agree with everything he does.
Well, what was it that he knew about how to communicate to that sort of person that you learned?
He was incredibly engaging. He was incredibly focused. He also used every bit of time he had to actually meet and talk to people, which I think is one of the mistakes we make in life right now, is not actually having conversations, whether that's with voters, whether that's with ourselves, right? That there's a huge wall that is out there that we don't break through. And he was very good about breaking through that wall and engaging with people as much as he could. So that meant knocking on every door in the district. It was a district where it was so uphill that we just had to talk to everyone. That meant
knocking through his whole team, not himself.
His whole team.
And was that what you were doing?
I was literally organizing canvassers and knocking doors myself in 6 rural counties in Indiana. And this district went from Kokomo to Gary. So it's a huge swath. And, you know, Jim was famous for doing 9 parades on the 4th of July, 6 of which started at 2:00. So he would ride his sister's bicycle in the parades, and they would lecture him at the beginning of the parade, and he'd be number 100 in the parade. And they'd say, Jim, you have to stay in formation. And he'd say, yes, yes, yes. And then as soon as the parade took off, he went from 100 to 85 to 75 to, you know, so it was, and waving along the way, we would canvass the whole route, but it's rural Indiana, so you're putting them in cars, you're in prop planes, flying, landing on grass strips to do 9 parades on one day on the 4th of July.
Sounds like he was fairly tireless.
He was fairly tireless and loved it, and really loved the engagement, and it was one of these things where he had an apartment that was in the back of the campaign headquarters, and I had to move some things around, and he had this little book that was in a box of things that I think from when he was a kid, he must have put this together when he was 13 or 14, that had postcards of every state capital in the country, right? And so this was something he'd thought about politics for a really long time, but he also really loved people and was super engaging. So yeah, one of my favorite topics to talk about. Lots of Jim Johns stories.
When you were working with him and for him, did you ever think, I want to be the candidate? Or was it always, I want to work for people like this?
I ran for a bunch of races in middle school and thinking I would be a good candidate, and I lost every single one of them.
Rather than winning by 10 votes.
lost every single one big. And so I realized early on in my life that I was not going to be a great candidate. But what I was very good at was running campaigns. I was really good at thinking through both the strategy, but also figuring out how to engage and interact with folks and move people to action, and really loved that. And there were times in my life where folks were like, hey, do you want to do policy? And really for me, working on the political side and the marketing side was where my calling was.
So what did the Johns campaign lead to? What went next?
So I knocked on doors, met people at hog processing plants, and bought hogs at auction for a whole summer, right, on the Johns campaign, all kinds of stuff like that. And then that led to running a city council race in East Baltimore. And I ran that campaign. That was the first campaign I ever ran. And it was a...
So you're how old at this point?
I am 21, 22 at this point.
That is who tends to run a race like that, right?
That's right.
A very early, young person, male or female.
Me and one candidate were in an office that is across the street from a fire station in Baltimore with window air conditioning and nothing else. And it was about 110 degrees in that little office with volunteers two stories up. In order to make a phone call, I would have to shut off the window air conditioners because they were old and loud. And then the volunteers would yell at me. And it was really about planning door to door and messaging. But yeah, this was where I got started. And
how'd your candidate do?
We won that race. So it was a guy named Perry Sfikas who got elected to city council there. We beat a pretty famous character named Dominic Mimi DiPietro. It was one of these very classic pick three city council races. And we did a really good job of both mail and door to door and everything. And then from there, I ran a congressional race for Albert Wynn in Maryland right after that. And so
I've been in the Wynn headquarters back in the day, which was a little disheveled, if I remember.
So this was his first campaign for Congress, which I ran. We were in a office of sort of a back office next to where he had a law office in PG County. And then there was also a satellite office we had in the White Oak Shopping Center out in Maryland. And it was, you know, this district that was both PG and Montgomery County. It was definitely trying to do these things on a shoestring and trying to promote Albert in a real way. And I mean, we, you know, did fun things like I wrote a poem and sent it to the Washington Post that was to the night before Christmas about the filing deadline. I wound up doing press on all the campaigns that I ran. I did a lot of the press work around that.
I mean, a guy with the last name Wynn seems like a fit for politics.
Right? Yeah, it was, right? Until, you know, and then that race was, there were a dozen candidates running and we won that race. So I had a couple really good wins. Then I got a phone call after that race to go work for a self-funder trial lawyer running for Congress in a Republican district in California and said, hey, you don't have to raise money. Come and run my race. And that didn't work out so well, right?
Who was that?
There's a guy named John Staley, and this was running a primary to go against Bill Baker. And that eventually became Alan Tauscher's district. So that district eventually became more progressive, whereas like some of these other places that I, especially rural Indiana, haven't since then. But it was interesting and I learned a lot. So I went to California, then I went back to Indiana after that California race to work for Phil Sharp and ran his last campaign for Congress that he won and then he retired. Then I went to New York, was the chief of staff in the New York State Legislature for a guy named Richard Brodsky, who became a friend and mentor. And like then he ran for county exec, and I ran the county exec race, and we lost by a point and a half on, you know, a big county executive race. And that was 93, 94. I went to Tennessee and ran all the House races for the Speaker of the House in Tennessee and ran a caucus, and I loved that. And then in 95, I went and did a tax bond referendum back in California. Then I did some NDI stuff and a little work for the DLCC as it was just starting, and then wound up at the DNC in 1996 as the Northeast desk.
That is a lifestyle fairly itinerant. And you know,
that's one way to describe it. I mean, this goes to like my parents, like, when are you going to get a real job? And so for 6 years of my life,
were you single during that time? What was going on the home front?
Both by choice and necessity, right? There was no home, right? At that point, there was me in a car, and I would strategically buy things that could fit in my car because that's all I really had.
And so you're following sort of the plan that you'd learn from Fenn, right?
Right.
So how many years of your life were before you ended up at the D-Trip?
At the DNC.
The DNC.
It was a Northeast desk at the DNC. And so that was from 1992, 1996, like I was just on the road. Yeah. And
learning a fair amount.
Learning a lot, yeah. Right? That was my graduate degree in politics, was going and doing that and running races. And I still think that it was a really great path for me.
What did you learn about the electorate that you can generalize about from that stretch of time?
It is hard to break through, but possible if you actually have some discipline and have a real message, in that we have such a limited amount of time in campaigns to move people that you have to be very focused about what your message is and delivering that, and very honed in on how you're going to deliver the message. So the strategy matters, and then figuring out the strategy and then operationalizing it with tactics really matters to me. A lot of times I see the mistake that people go the other way around. They start with tactics first instead of thinking about strategy first. So I think that I really learned from my mentors and being on the road was just how important having a message and a strategy and a contrast really are in these campaigns. And then frankly, taking the time to actually raise the money and make the fundraising calls and knock on doors and communicate with people and really do that work. And it is a lot of work. That discipline matters so much.
What do you like to see in a candidate that you're going to run the race for or work for as a consultant?
So I would never say as a consultant that we run the race, right? So that's the first thing I would say. We're part of a team. We collaborate. But what I would say is that what I'm looking for in candidates, whether I'm training them or consulting, is just one sort of an understanding of creating priorities in both their life and in during the campaign, of how they can prioritize what they're doing, and really that focus of being willing to do some things that are inherently hard to do. Focus to me matters so much, whether that's knocking on doors or raising money. Those things are not easy and frankly are monotonous. And what I'm looking for is one who really cares and wants to make a change and is doing it for the right reasons and then is going to work on the fundamentals to do them.
So what was that DNC job like?
So the DNC job was super interesting. I mean, I had been all over the country at that point. I never thought I'd get a job in Washington, D.C. at that point until all of a sudden folks are like, hey, how about doing this job? I'm like, that'd be great. And sure enough, I was the Northeast desk at the DNC, and that was working on and helping really organize the coordinated campaigns from Maryland to Maine. And those were my states and working on those. And this was the second term of Clinton. And it was great. And I met a ton of people and really got to engage with sort of a higher level of an organizational aspect that I hadn't been able to do, but also really working with folks on fundamentals of what do you need to run a coordinated campaign and what kind of help can we really give you? And yeah, but I made a lot of friends from that period of time.
What was the next big thing for you?
I left the DNC after 96 and 97. I went and worked with Will Robinson to do television. Then I had...
So he's still going.
Yeah, and he's still going.
Yeah.
Yep.
What did you learn from Will or with Will?
I learned, again, just sort of the operational aspect of being a part of a political consulting firm and just getting the work done. And there was a lot of work to do for clients. I worked on a ballot measure around carpal tunnel syndrome. It was workers' compensation reform in the state of Ohio. So this was the second ballot measure at this point that I had done. I had done that tax bond referendum, and then I was doing a lot of work on this. I was on that client and then working on AG's race in Virginia at that time. And so I got to work on a bunch of things and really enjoyed it. And then I went off on my own and actually started my first business with a friend at that point and started doing smaller television projects. And that was for the 98 cycle. And then in 99, I made the change out of television and went into the mail business. So I joined a mail firm with a guy named Ross Bates and Rich Niemann at a firm called Bates Niemand and was in that firm through 2002 and then joined Hal Malchow's firm, MSHC Partners, in 2003 and became a partner there.
So you're kind of came out of the world of running campaigns and went into the world of party and then consultants and kind of learning all different sides of the business.
That's right, from every aspect. I had a really good grounding of everything in knocking on doors and field campaigns, which I did a ton of, to television, to mail. And then in one of the things that I helped really work on was we started in 2003 at MSHC Partners, we started digital, and really I got to work on that part of the business as well for my clients and really helping build that. So that was great.
I know that you've been a trainer for the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund for a long, long time, like overlapping a lot of this history.
Yeah.
How did that start and what do you do for them?
There was a really great trainer named Dave Fleischer who was training for Victory Fund, and he left. Brian Bond at that time was the president of Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, and they needed somebody to help run a training. And he called me on, I think, a Monday and said they had a training in, I think the first training was in Atlanta, and we had it, and he's like, hey, can you be in Atlanta on Thursday? And I could. And so I went and I worked on outline and training materials and just sort of crammed that and started working on that. And they really liked me. And so that was great. And I really liked working on for LGBT candidates. I thought that was great. And so I started doing that training work. I believe that was 98 or 99. This will be my 20th year of doing training for them. And I just kept doing it. I had done in my sort of itinerant campaign work, I also did a stint for National Democratic Institute for International Affairs, where I was in Azerbaijan and Kyrgyzstan doing political party training. And so I really, at that point, realized I loved to train. I knew that training would never be a full-time job. It just, the economics of it, but I really love teaching people how to run for office. And so with Victory Fund, I was able to do that. And we were able to build a team of trainers that I continue to train with now. And it's been a really amazing, we've been able to do a lot of movement building through training, which is great.
It's obvious that the political culture around running as a gay person has changed tremendously in those 20 years, right?
Well, so as an LGBT candidate, right, you know, which we would say it has changed, but I would also say that in some parts of the country, it is still incredibly challenging, right? We still have states where there are no LGBT candidates and they haven't elected an LGBT candidate yet for a state legislative race.
We got a long way to go,
We still have ways to go. What we saw 20 years ago, and what we see now is that the message of a LGBT candidate that they're open and honest about their life. And if they're going to be open and honest about this, they're going to be open and honest about taxes, about what's going on in the community. And that, frankly, breaks through these days as much as it ever did, right? That need for honesty and openness about what's going on in government, I think, is something that's needed. And there's still room for us to elect more LGBT candidates. And what I'll also say is that I work for LGBT candidates, I work for straight candidates, and usually like the LGBT candidates that I've worked for have been more qualified than the straight candidates. And it's because they're on their second or third job, their second or third career. It's pretty amazing some of the folks that we've been able to help elect.
What do you do differently or need to do differently if you're training an LGBT candidate versus a straight candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference is just understanding your personal story and narrative and how that applies to a campaign, and then making sure that is something that the electorate can be a part of and engage with, and just knowing that to some people that might be an issue being an LGBT candidate, and that you want to make sure that people know it's a positive. We have a 3.5-day training program at the Victory Institute that we've been doing for 20 years, and it, I think, is really been helpful in electing LGBT candidates, but I certainly don't do it alone. And there's a great team at Victory that does it and that is in recruiting the right people to be in the room to take the training, and have a lot of great trainers who do it, but it's rewarding.
At the top of the interview, you indicated that you started Campaign Workshop around 2009. What's the founding story there? What was going on?
So the founding story there was that I was leaving MSHE Partners. I had just come to a point where I really wanted to do something that I had more control of. MSHE Partners at that point was 60 employees, would scale up to 120 employees, and they're great people there. Ton who've gone on to do amazing things and have their own firms, and you know, and Hal Malchow is a mentor, and it was great. But it was also, I had come to a point where doing something on my own was something it was gnawing at me, and I called Sophie Thurber, who had worked with me at MSHC Partners, to say, hey, I'm going to start this thing. You want to come work for me? I don't know what it's going to be like. And she's still here at the Campaign Workshop. She's a senior VP. And it was rewarding to start something with one employee in a room above a Krispy Kreme and turn it into like something real that has employees and long-term clients. But the idea of the company was to not be singularly focused around a single medium. So the whole idea of the Campaign Workshop was to look at campaigns first and say, all right, what is the way that a campaign can win? How can we help them win? What is the way that organizations and groups can win advocacy battles? How can we help them do that? We're not going to be able to do all of it, but how do we assist in doing that? And that could be digital, that could be mail, that could be limited television. It could be just really messaging and defining messaging. So it's really thinking about how do we do that? And that's what we do as a company. We've also been really driven on pushing out information and having a blog. We have about 20 to 30,000 people a month that come to our blog to read about campaign tactics and advocacy tactics. And we just thought
it's your inbound marketing.
Well, yeah, but we also felt like it's part of our mission to be transparent. I mean, when we started writing, I had a consultant who called me once and was like, hey, why are you telling all these secrets in your blog? And my view is there really aren't secrets, and that we should be doing a better job of training people. Training's a big part of what we do. And so there's a lot of people who read our blog that will never hire us, right? Because they're running races that are too small, but we want to help move the progressive movement forward and give basic information. But then we also feel like we get to engage and connect with people, and that's a real way to do that.
Who does really hire you?
Everything from candidates running for office. We do
typically at what level?
At the municipal level or statewide level. It just depends. And then we do a lot of county, local, municipal. We do a lot of judges races. We do state legislative races, but all the way up, right? So it's a huge range of who comes in here. And then
who's been a favorite client for you?
Favorite clients are like individual candidates who run for office. It's everything from like Stephen Skinner, who ran for state rep in West Virginia, is a favorite client, or Luke Klippinger, like on the small side. And then on the large side, we love doing the independent expenditure work. So we do a lot of independent expenditure work for groups and organizations. We also do a lot of issue work for groups like American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, or National Resource Defense Council, as well as labor union work. I can't say I have a single favorite, because the truth is we really like the diversity of the work and a ton of the clients.
Who do you compete with? Are there companies that are doing anything similar that are not the single medium type companies?
So it's interesting. I mean, I think these days a lot of companies say they do a lot of things, but I don't know, sometimes they really do them, and sometimes they partner or don't really do them and say they do them. I think we really work very hard to do the work here that we do. I think it's a differentiator. I will say that we compete and partner sometimes with the same people, right? Sometimes there are teams that we're on with someone one week that we're doing one role, and then another week we're competing for an account. And this is sort of the way the business is, but I think we're pretty nice in the sandbox and don't have sharp elbows. And our goal, we would like to win accounts. Really, what we want to do is help clients win campaigns and win issues. And that's what we love to do.
What has challenged you most in trying to build this company?
Oh, well, first, people in politics are usually horrible business people, with exceptions with folks who are sitting in front of me. I think you've done very well in this world, in navigating this world. But I think there's a lot of folks who don't really try and become business people.
And also running a service business. I mean, I ran a product business. That's an entirely different thing.
Yes and no, right? I think probably the thing is that I think service businesses don't look at themselves enough like product businesses. Part of, for me, it was to really think about approaches to a business and running a business and being able to figure out what are the things that I'm good at, what are the things that I could bring value in the business, and also how do I give other people room to work within the business and a stake, but also make sure that I'm still around to help clients and be a part of strategy and message. And it's that mix, but building a business and looking at what is cash flow for a business, what is the right mix of services, how do you have enough of that coming in at different parts, that's an art. So I've joined organizations like Cadre here in DC or the Entrepreneurs Organization, both of which have really helped me learn about running a business versus running a political business, and really have worked to talk and meet with business owners outside of the political sphere to get a better grounding on how to run a stronger business.
How far along into running Campaign Workshop did you start to do that kind of work? Like, I'm going to try to improve myself as a businessman.
Probably about a year to 2 years in. I mean, the first amount of money that I ever spent on the business was building a production system for the business. I knew from the get-go that I really needed to build systems, and frankly, that it was something inherently that I wasn't good at. I'm a very much a big picture thinker, but knowing sort of what are those list of things, what are the holes, how do I build them? And because I had such a diverse background in political businesses and in campaigns, it allowed me, and frankly, I think it's part of my dyslexia, is to sort of have the ability to see around corners and think about what my weaknesses are and try and turn those into strengths. So immediately I worked to like hire people that could help me. Knowing that I couldn't do it myself, I joined EO as soon as I could. Like, as soon as I could reach a threshold where I could join EO, I joined the Entrepreneurs Organization.
That was like a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that was
in gross revenue for a year. Yeah.
Right. So that was
Which is pretty substantial for a small business, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was after our first cycle, after 2010, I joined EO as soon as I could.
I know that EO, having been a member myself, I know that you meet in these forums with other business owners, which are typically not in the political space.
Yep.
How was that helpful?
Oh, well, it was incredibly helpful. I mean, and it is, and I'm still in a forum today. And for me, what was really helpful about it was sitting with a bunch of entrepreneurs in my forum, ranged from having 5 people in it to having as many as 8 people in it. But we would meet once a month. You know forum, but I don't know that everyone who's listening to this does. But it's basically a group of entrepreneurs. You sit around, you meet for 3.5 hours once a month, and you talk about everything that's going on in your life and in your business, and really try and share at a pretty deep level to get an understanding of what was going on and what you want to do. And it really allowed me to create personal accountability. Just like when I talk about candidates, that idea of like knocking on doors and raising money for running a business, you have those equivalents in your life, right? Like running a business is like, how are you being accountable to your employees? How are you creating the culture that you want? How are you working to figure out the clients that you want and or the clients that aren't a right fit for you, and really understanding that mix and really building the business. And so that allowed me that accountability.
A lot of the problems and opportunities that you would face in your business would be very similar to ones that people face in any business. What was different about your business than the others?
So what's different about a political business, especially when I started, was the cyclical nature of it, right? That I was in such a cycle-based business. And so we've really worked on the advocacy side and sort of on the movement side to get out of just being focused specifically on campaigns. We love candidate campaigns, but just doing them makes it very hard on staff and frankly, very hard on the campaigns themselves. So we take a limited number of those. And then we also do a lot of other types of work for groups and organizations around building movements that is much more year-round focused. So, but what was interesting is I would talk about the cyclical nature of this. And then when I talk to other entrepreneurs, they're like, wow, that's really interesting. Talk to us about the scaling that you do. Talk to us about, you know, how you move things around. And because what we found is businesses themselves are trying to be a lot more flexible, and flexibility is something that I inherently know how to do and have to do.
So you had something to offer them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You said when you were a 19-year-old or thereabouts that Peter Fenn suggested to you, go out, work for 6 years before you kind of work your way towards the world of consulting. What advice would you give now to the 19-year-old that came in asking you something similar?
Well, that if you can do campaigns, you should go out and do campaigns in the field. Whether or not you need to do 6 years of it is, I think, an open question. It really depends on what you want to do. I also think there's a lot more opportunity in the greater political space than there was when I was starting out. And so I think really thinking about the long term, about what you want to get out of it, what are the things that you like to do, is something I'd recommend for anyone looking for any work. It's like, what do you like to do? What are those things? Managing a campaign really does put you on a management track. And that has been helpful, that, you know, there are many people who specialize in field or specialize in press. I became a generalist, but it allowed me to do a lot of different things. And that was very helpful for me in running a business in the future.
Political consulting as a profession is not a lot more than 50 years old, right? It's a new field and kind of pioneered in this country.
Yep.
And you've been around for a good amount of that development. What do you like and not like about the profession? How do you evaluate how it does these days?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, in reality, what we are is we're an advertising marketing agency that's focused on politics and advocacy, right? Though everything we do is politically related, it is not always electoral, right? We do lots of work that is not related on elections, but more related to movements. My criticism of the industry is that I don't think we're as honest as we should be sometimes, both with people getting in, as well as, frankly, with making sure we're really honest with the clients, right? I mean, there are issues on the digital side that I've had for a long time that I've talked about, which is making sure we're honest with clients about things like match rates, that every consultant is not as honest as they could be about those issues. And to me, I think it's really trying to be as transparent as you can. Those are my criticisms of it. But I also think that it is what's great about the business is that it allows you to engage in politics and engage in issues and make change for a living, which is really amazing. So that's the neat part.
What do you think of the state of the Democratic Party right now?
What's the phrase that I'm not a member of an organized political party? I'm a Democrat, right? That's what is that?
Will Rogers.
Yeah. I mean, so I think there's still some of that. I mean, my criticism of the party has been the same criticism I've had for a really long time, and that it has some structural problems, and that a political party means very different things to different people, right? From a someone who's in a rural county, it might be a political party, might be a social aspect to them, that they go to the Democratic fish fry and that they meet people and they go there. But in most places in the country, right, they're not a precinct committee person. They're not operationally a part of a Democratic Party, but they identify politically as a Democrat. So it's very broad. I think in a lot of places, the political party structure that is local is broken. Right. So there's not a lot of value that people are getting from being a part of a political party. We have a better identity now than we've had for a while, and that we have kind of a common enemy in Trump to fight. And that's made us make our message clearer and better. I think there's still some structural problems that are hard in scaling and operationalizing a national party. And I don't know that we have focused enough on that. When we win presidentials, it's sometimes that goes to the wayside of doing the hard work to continue to build a party. And I don't know that we've done that enough as a community.
We have a big 2020 presidential primary coming up on our side with oodles of candidates. part of that is trying to pick among people, and part of that is trying to pick among different notions of what would be a successful type of candidate, right? Like whether it is someone who motivates activists, or whether it is somebody who can compete for the median voter, or whether it is a minority or a female, or what do you think are the characteristics of a strong candidate to put up against a guy like Trump?
I mean, I think, first of all, you have to be able to speak to the electorate, engage with the electorate, and break through, right? And I think there's a limited amount of candidates that can actually do that and have an authentic voice, but also really deliver a message that is strong. There's a lot of people sitting around right now saying, I want somebody who's great and who'll be Trump. I don't know who that is yet, right? That's what a lot of folks are saying. I think from my perspective, there's a lot of great candidates in the field. There might be a few others. I feel like my sole focus would be, frankly, to really want to make sure that we're doing everything we can here to beat Trump, right? That's what we, you know, in our political work.
And so who comes to mind for you when you think about breaking through and having that capability?
Kamala Harris, Bernie, Biden, if he gets in, all can do that. I mean, and there's others in there as well that I do think, you know, they're not really on the like top of mind yet. What's good and bad about having this many candidates? There's going to be a lot to choose from. What's bad about it is that it's going to move much faster than anyone thinks. It's going to narrow very quickly because the map is so changed around. And again, this really gets
you get California quickly.
Right. Yeah,
a lot of delegates can be assigned very quickly, and only people who can compete by raising large sums.
That's right.
In one way or another, can still be in it.
That's correct. And so that's going to change very fast. And again, you still are going to have Iowa, New Hampshire, and those will matter. But California is going to matter a lot more now. And so it makes it very interesting.
Where would you like to see campaign workshop in 5 or 10 years? Where do you want to be?
I mean, we want to continue to be doing more work on issues and campaigns. We continue to like to do the institutional work, but we like to do the candidate work. And so having a broad range of clients is something we want to continue to do. The advocacy space is something that has really grown for us, and we love doing that work. And having that be a good year-round business that we can train, but also build campaigns for folks. That's what I want to continue to do. I mean, and have good people to work with through it. So, and the growth's been great.
What should I have asked you that I failed to?
I mean, you might want to ask about my hobbies. So I have I recently done some stand-up comedy. So that's been really interesting, and taking some of those stories from my life and weaving that into comedy.
So can you give us one slight bit or right off the top of your head?
I mean, I could give you part of a routine,
right? All right.
So like I talked about, you know, when I first worked for Jim Jontz, that one of the things I did that first summer on campaigns was buy livestock at auction. And so I was, here I was, this
livestock, pigs, cattle,
whatever you could think of, but mainly hogs and cows is what I bought. And so I would go to a county fair, a 4-H fair in rural Indiana. I would identify somebody in the community that had raised a prize-winning cow or pig. And then I would get a donor that would be willing to pay for the scholarship of the kid who you buy the cod for. So basically the way 4-H fairs work is that you have a form that you fill out where you can buy the cow or pig outright, right? Or you could take that and go to the slaughterhouse and actually, and you can get the meat of that cow or pig, or you can bid above what the target price is for the cow, and that money goes to a scholarship for the kid. And the difference, right, is like, so anyway.
So this is quite a long setup for a for a cow or pig based joke.
you asked it, I know you liked a lot of detail, so I'm giving
I'm well set up.
Okay, you're well set up. So anyway, so I would identify the cow, the pig, and what was interesting was that I had spent this time in this community where I had gone to hog processing plants and, you know, had worked with literally a guy named Earl who was the foreman of a hog processing plant and would be on the kill floor, and his job was to like drain blood. And so those were my relationships in the community. And then I would go to these 4-H fairs and I would buy cows at auction, and the candidate would
Who hasn't done this?
And the candidate would bid on the cow, and we would win the cow, and we also won the election, and it worked out for everyone except for Elsie the cow. She wound up with Earl, right? So that's the punchline of the joke. So anyway.
Oh, God. Poor Elsie.
Poor Elsie, right. It was really interesting. I did this class with a Vegas comedian named Matt Kazam, and it was really to work on, for me, my public speaking.
Is
and
that through DC Improv?
You know, he used to do work through DC Improv. He now has a company called They Laugh, You Win that is-
And do you recommend this to other? Because doesn't he do this for entrepreneurs?
He does it for entrepreneurs.
I had another friend who was thinking of doing it.
I totally recommend it. The other thing that I'd also recommend is if you don't want to like work with a Vegas comedian, I've taken a storytelling class at a DC-based group called Story District, which is really great, and it's about long form storytelling.
And do you recommend that political consultants get into comedy? Is there a link here?
Well,
does it help you with your pitches?
I don't think that you have to necessarily get into comedy, and I wouldn't say that it's consultants per se, but what I'd say is entrepreneurs in general, that if you're doing public speaking, figuring out a different way to get better at your public speaking and to be more intentional about the words you use and what you say is important. And to
what
be
if
able
you're the
to
type
tell-
of guy who can't remember a punchline?
Well, that's why storytelling might be better than having to put together lots of punchlines. Yeah.
Well, it was very enjoyable to talk to you today. Anything else you want to say?
No, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And if folks want to check out the blog and see different things we're writing at about it, it's at www.thecampaignworkshop.com. We have a great blog with a lot of information on there.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you.
Bye. That was Joe Fold of the Campaign Workshop. He's at thecampaignworkshop.com. I hope Joe wins some campaigns for us this cycle. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.